Citizen Advisory Committee. It's easier than I thought. Our mission statement is in our committee's title, to advise the City Council on reclaiming Morro Bay's waste water. Should Morro Bay continue to rely on state water, or do we reclaim? Many coastal cities don't have the luxury of state water. We know the state water bond passed $7.5 billion worth of water issues in the state of California to compare against. So the top chart. Let's see. The top chart there. You can see that you have four inputs to our Morro Bay annual water requirements: the state water, Morro and Choro Creek wells, and the desal plant. It all adds up to about 1,100 acre feet, and that goes, in addition to Cayucas, into the treatment plant and into the ocean. Now, let's look at the lower half, the second chart down below. What I did was try to put together our options for reclaimed water. So I used one option, Choro Creek release. The first question that I hope that you have is in the second box in the middle. And what is our treatment plant minimum permit requirements? My guess is the Coastal Commission's criteria for ocean discharge. I don't know that. I don't pretend to be an expert, but I'm just trying to crank through this. So that would be the second box for the least amount of investment that Morro Bay can make to get by the permit process. The third box would be an additional tertiary that must have a return on investment, and the only place that I can think of a return on investment in that additional tertiary is lower water costs for our residents. So let's look at it. First of all, you've got assumptions up there, very important assumptions that have to be reasonable and achievable. And then last and most important, as you feed back and see what the effect is on water, like for instance the Choro wells there, you see that there's 535 acre feet available for water use for Morro Bay if we go through the appropriate conditioning and tertiary treatment. So how would that affect the Morro Bay annual dollar requirements for water? That's the question, that's the bottom line, and that's the question that I want to ask and be able to get answers to. So down below at the bottom, you see the different options that I came up with, and I'm sure there are others that haven't been addressed, maybe less, I don't know. But I included the purple pipe, the CMC, the Choro Creek, Cayucas or not, Choro Creek well recharge, Morro well recharge, Morro Creek AG, Choro Creek AG, and whatever else that may come. So that's about it. So what I would like to see is I would request this committee to consider asking staff to develop a straightforward format, perhaps similar to these charts, clearly showing the cost or savings for our residents for each option. I think that we could update these formats as more information became available and assumptions are clarified. And with that, that's the end of my presentation.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions or comments related to the presentation?
Go ahead. Just one question, and it was a question that Bill obviously didn't know, and that was the minimum permit requirements. I guess this is the order from the regional board that we have to comply with. Is that what he means?
It all depends where the water will be discharged to. Currently, if we were to, say, discharge the... I mean, we went through this with
Larry Walker and Associates. They kind of walked us through the different permitting requirements for the different discharges. The lowest permitting requirement is an ocean discharge. The highest is Bay Council, and the Cayuga Sanitary District made a commitment to up that game to treat to tertiary level as their minimum discharge requirement.
Is the cost analysis going to be part of the November 10th report that's coming out? Is there going to be costs in there, or what is going to...
I'll let Mike Nunley speak to that a little bit more, but I do think that we should assume that the cost analysis won't be complete for that report. We may be able to give a little bit better status report about where that's headed, but we still need key information from the Corolla study to help figure that out.
And when is the Corolla, when's that going to be done? Do you know?
We're looking at an internal draft of that available on or about the 18th of November with the purpose of it getting out around the 1st of December.
Okay. So are they going to, is the city council going to be able to pick a site without a cost?
That'll be up to the city council. I think it will be difficult for them to, I think it would help them to have the cost information for sure. That'll be their choice, though, how that goes.
Okay.
I just have a clarifying question for Bill to make sure I understand what he's asking staff to do to prepare all these different assumptions and costs. Is that something you're asking them to do immediately? Do we have enough information or requirements for staff or whomever that is to, you know, fulfill this request?
That's my dream. I would like to see staff fill in all the blanks that they have. The 1,100 acre feet usage by Morro Bay annually, and that's about it. And then we know what the ultimate capacity of Morro and Choro Creek wells are. And as far any other information, I don't know.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
We have some of this information, right? Some of the water, basic water costs, we could fill in this chart and get that information to you. But as the Corolla report finishes, we'll be able to fill in some of the information, maybe not to the same level of accuracy of what we know our existing water costs are, because we write a check for those, so it's easy to determine what those are. But we'll have estimates for some level of the other costs. And some we may not know, but we'll have to make assumptions, but we'll let the committee know what those assumptions are that we are making.
Yeah, you could bold assumptions, you know, if you're within 50%, put them in red, and if they're within 20%, put them in purple, and then if they're within 10%, you can put them in green. And then I think just as important, Barbara, is the assumptions. I'm reading these assumptions, and I haven't heard whether these assumptions are pie-in-the-sky thinking or are they realistic, and I think that's very important as well.
I agree, and I want to make sure we're comparing apples to apples and using assumptions that are in some reasonable range from which we can make some determination of true costs.
And Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, we all share the same goal. I think we are reluctant to put any information out that we don't feel has been cooked long enough, because once something's out, people will run with it. And we can make assumptions. We want to make our assumptions as realistic as possible. So we all share that goal.
Mr. Chair, I have one more question. Are we as a committee supposed to give our blessing to one site or another before the city council? Are we supposed to do that? Or?
Well, it's my understanding that we're, as the advisory committee, going to be advising on what we think is the best course of action for the city council to take. And if we conclude that is specific to a site, if it's more direction, we can have that deliberation, well, probably today, because this is our last scheduled meeting, on what sort of recommendation we want to provide to them. And it could be in any sort of different format.
So do you think we have enough information so far to do that?
I was going to wait for the next report, to be honest with you. And have that discussion as an asset to this advisory committee, is if we do have enough information or not, and what next steps we wanted to take and what sort of recommendation we wanted to provide.
So we're not going to be able to have another meeting before that?
And part of my thinking was that one of our recommendations could be that it would not be wise for the city council to make a site determination that in Morro Bay's case or not is uncertain. It's speculation. It would be, I believe, unwise to assume that they wouldn't require a component of it or have the expectation that the plant's reclamation ready and can proceed with that. Because if we just go down the path of what are the treatment requirements but not look at the full picture and big picture of what is going to be required by all the permitting agencies, we could be taking a step backwards, in fact.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the reminder. I just want to remind everybody, in our own LCP, we committed to providing reclaimed water as our next water supply project for the community. And I think we committed to somewhere around 700 acre feet a year of reclaimed water. I don't think there's an expectation that that is available day one, but we did commit to, as a water supply project, to in our LCP, and which is the law of the land.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up. And for the audience, or I guess I should say our fans out there, LCP is a local coastal plan, and that is the guiding document that the Coastal Commission reviews when they look at permits that they approve in our city.
Yeah. And so, or that, we look at ourselves.
If we self-certify.
We are the primary permitting agency outside of the original jurisdiction. So.
Correct. So anything that's in that, we can't do anything that's in conflict with the LCP. Thanks.
On that LCP, I believe it is 770 acre feet a year, but do you recall what section of the LCP that's cited in?
I don't remember the exact number, but perhaps John can. It's in the water management section.
It's actually in the report. I think it's policy 80 point something. I can't remember exactly, but somehow it's ringing a bell. It's actually referred to in our report.
8.07 or 8.13,
something
around there. You're right. Eight's the right direction.
Now, would that cut into the ag use, reuse for ag?
The LCP policy for reclaimed water anticipated that some of that water would be used for agricultural use, municipal irrigation. It didn't specify a portion for what product, but it gave a suite of options that we could use that reclaimed water for.
Okay.
And ag was one of those.
And ag was one of them. So the total outfall of the plant was at, I forget how many acre feet it was, 1,200 or something
like that. Yeah.
So that would 700 would take out of that 1,200?
That would be the minimum amount that we have committed to looking forward in the LCP to provide.
So
I don't think there's a maximum amount.
Okay, so ag would only get what's left over?
No.
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 Because what we learned at the last meeting was that providing the water to ag would enhance the well fields and provide a municipal source of water. So if there's that secondary benefit of the ag using the water, you could probably argue that providing it to ag, it becomes a water supply for the city.
I think that's what the LCP anticipates, is that through ag use, you're offsetting other uses, therefore benefiting the city, and you're really benefiting the entire coastal zone by that, not just...
Yeah, and I was going to mention, too, that ag resources are a very high-priority coastal resource for the Coastal Commission. Okay. Well, great discussion. Let's move on to C2, then, because this was just receive and file. C2 is a staff presentation on John Rickenbach's report regarding the two facilities, CMC and Rancho Colima.
And John's going to lead us through this discussion. We don't really have a good way to do PowerPoint in this building, so we're going to do it the old-fashioned way and just talk about it.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I want to introduce also Mike Nunley is here today, and he helped write this, and a lot of the technical work he really coordinated with the other reports that you've already seen. And this report is really a distillation of information we've already gotten, plus a lot of new things you haven't seen before. What I'd like to do is, in addition to walking through this a little bit, and I realize probably many of you have already read through it, others may not so closely, but for the benefit of those who might be listening, I think it's worthwhile going through what we have here. I think it's also, first off, important to know this is not a complete report. It's a very close to complete report, but it is missing key information related to cost. And we note that in the report. By the time it gets to the council, I expect it's still going to be missing that. We may have a little bit more information to report independent of this report just to bring an update for the council. But we're aware of that being a hole in the report, which we intend to address. And it's really going to become the council's prerogative about what they want to do about that. But we do agree that there is benefit that was... on a level playing field between the two. Our report is really structured very simply. It's based on key questions and the degree to which one site or the other was better or about the same relative to those questions. What I'd like to do is essentially walk you through a little bit to what the overall purpose. It's not just to pick the best site. We're really responding to council direction. We are also trying to provide some preliminary cost estimate information, which will be useful as we go down the master planning process beyond site selection. There are opportunities in this to actually update information we had provided before, especially regarding reclamation. We knew a little bit more than we did before. I think your input has been extremely valuable over the last few weeks to help us write this report on some key issues. And ultimately, we're going to provide information to the council now. All that to say, this is really the beginning of a... Sure.
I apologize.
No problem.
Meg Rescue 15 and 3469 and 5392 Breeze 462. Structure fire 1888 8th Street, 1888 8th Street. The Bay Command Correction, Command 4, the Tactical Deepfire 22, San Luis 1530.
All we need is a SWAT 51 theme song.
Okay, no problem. Got to put out the fires around here. I'm just trying to put out another one right here. It's one at a time. But really, in a comparison, there are a lot of issues that have come up over the last year or so, big, broad themes that have to do with cost, obviously, funding options, permitting implications, water use benefits, logistics, and the implications, of course, to the Morro Bay ratepayers. Of course, we're looking at this from Morro Bay's perspective, but the Cayuca Sanitary District has been informed along the way about what we've been doing on these technical sites. They've been copied in any kind of correspondence, and frankly, what you've got in front of you right now is brand new. Nobody has seen it but you guys, and So what we're really reporting is a very front-end report. You have seen some of the technical studies that went into this, so not everything in here is a complete surprise. I do want to go through here what the key questions are and go through each one at a time and really talk about, in as simple terms as possible, the basic conclusions we're able to come up with. The first one, the basic one, is this. What are the unique regional benefits associated with constructing a regional facility at one site or the other? And how do these relate to the city's stated goals? Now, that's a fundamental starting off point for the entire study. And what we found out of that is that both sites have some regional benefits. I think and one doesn't stand out from the other necessarily. I think the big one for CMC is more an administrative benefit. If you can combine everybody into one site, you're in a position, certainly from the regional board's perspective, to aid in the permitting. There may be some cost savings implications for consolidating staff and such. So there's an upside there. At Rancho Colina, a regional benefit that's sort of maybe a little better for that is its location in the midst of ag use that could directly benefit from reclaimed water in that area. And both sites, we found through our investigations, are actually fairly equidistant to the regional water distribution network. So the idea of tying into regional water supply systems actually could be done pretty easily from either site. One key thing about CMC, and we'll get into this later, is that the multi-agency nature of it is going to take longer, so those benefits may take longer to realize. So overall, you might say that Rancho Colina, from a unique regional perspective, might be a little better, but they both have their upside. Now, the second question, are there potential cost savings for the city if it goes to CMC versus Rancho Colina? And that's a big, big question having to do with construction, operation, pipeline construction, a host of other issues, how that translates out the back end to cost of water and so forth. And rather than even speculate on it right now, and of course we're working on it, we do have some preliminary information, but it's very preliminary. We're going to hold off on reporting any of that right now. We can tell you that the Carollo study, on which much of this is based, is well underway. One of the issues has been trying to secure data from CDCR that we can use, flow data that's going to help in determining the extent, and we went through that to some degree with the Cleith Harris report, and of course they reported to council last week. To distill that down, obviously there was a lot of technical issues right there. What we found really is that both sides really have some water supply benefits, and they're fairly similar but not the same. There are unique considerations at both locations. With the CMC site, in very shorthand, there might be a greater direct benefit to the city potentially in drought years. That would be negated to some extent by some minimum stream flow and water rights issues that may potentially be in play in the Chorro Valley. So that there's a lot of unknowns there. The Rancho Colina site looks a little better in normal to wet years. And CSD's participation, if they do, at Rancho Colina, really improves things for the city relative to that, because you have more flow going in, more potential water supply benefit there. You do have a lot of ag users in the Moro Valley that, without getting into the weeds here too much, whether the water is directly benefiting the city's wells in the Moro Valley or more used directly by the growers there and then indirectly benefiting the city, you do have a water supply benefit one way or another that comes into play there. There's also less complex permitting potentially in the Moro Valley if you're talking about using it directly with growers and then having the wet weather discharge through the outfalls being part of that. So again, it's not a cut-and-dried situation. There's a lot of technical issues there, but you do have potential benefits going either way. Now let's talk about ag reclamation potential. Are there better opportunities one place or another? We went into that in some detail in our May report from this year. We did learn a little bit more. In our May report, we assumed many fewer opportunities in Chorro Valley than we our reporting here. And we did that for a good reason. In that report, we looked at the Tri-W site, which is right there next to the city. So we didn't have to look very, we didn't want to look too far up the Chorro Valley to move the water in the other direction. But now that we're looking at the CMC site, we wanted to be a little bit more comprehensive about all the ag users up and down the Chorro Valley between the CMC site and the city, which is roughly in linear miles about six. So it's a long area in there. We also, of course, there's other things, such as the Dairy Creek Golf Course, which uses about 250 acre feet. I think about 188 currently from the CMC plant go there right now. But in shorthand, there's about 545 acres of potential irrigated ag, both in use and potentially irrigable between the CMC site and the city. And a lot of that, however, is at a higher elevation than the plant site. It's also worth noting, because you're talking about a six-mile stretch in there, a lot of that is anywhere from 1 to 4 miles from either the plant site or the city, depending on how you look at it. So there are long distances with pipelines involved in that. At Rancho Colina, we're talking about closer to 1,100 acres of irrigated ag. Most of it is within a mile or two of either the potential reclamation site or the city. So we're talking about shorter distances. Roughly 70% of those sites are at a lower elevation than where the reclamation facility would be located. And in general, there's greater ag water demand in the Moro Valley. So I would suspect that that would be a Moro Valley project would really be one that would tie more into the growers. A Chorro Valley project is one that you'd be looking more at direct benefits to whatever users are in the Chorro Valley other than growers, although that's certainly a potential out there as well. But if you have to really boil it down from an ag reclamation perspective, Rancho Colina is just better. I don't think there's a lot of question about that. There's greater opportunity potential there, though obviously with CMC there are other users in play out there, such as the golf course, which are important to consider in that equation. Now we come to probably the one of the most difficult issues to try to sort through, and that's the logistics. Are there unique regulatory or logistical constraints that may limit potential water supply or reclamation from either site? And this is a complicated one because we're talking about a lot of agencies, and I think it's really worth kind of walking through this one. On the CMC site, we'll start with that. I think this is really one of the critical issues that's working against CMC. Trying to corral the State Department of Corrections and the county and the city and Cayucas is not impossible, but it will present some real challenges here. It starts with the state. It's their facility out there, and they recently upgraded it in part to address regional board concerns. And what we found in contacting them directly, both here locally and at the state level, is they're just not that interested in expanding it anymore anytime soon. Now, that's a fundamental issue right there. There's also more than that. We learned that they can't just simply say whether or not they want to do it. If the water benefits for them, then the wastewater. They also said in that letter that maybe there was the potential for Moro Bay and Cayucas to come along to save some money. That was the concept at that time. And so that was the starting point for the entire conversation and led to where we are today. Our basic assumption in that, and the one that the county put in their letter, was that they were willing to go forward as leading that charge. What we've learned since then in many meetings with the county and the state since that time is that the county, at the staff level, public works level, no longer seems to be making that a priority anymore. They have not indicated a high level of interest in doing that anytime soon. There's a lot of things the county's working on. And in fact, that played out during the summer in trying to create the framework for doing the studies that we're working on right now. We found that was actually challenging to try to get things moving along because we couldn't get an obvious leadership role at the county staff level to make this go. Obviously, Paavo Ogren's departure affected that to a large degree, and so now we are where we are. What we have learned, though, is that because it's not a high county priority and the state is not that interested in moving forward soon, we'll have to figure that one out. We do know there's a lot of interest at the regional board executive officer level for working at CMC. And so that's obviously a big plus if, you know, to have the regional board's backing if that's the case. We do know that that's right now we understand that's from the executive officer. The regional board itself has taken no position one way or another on CMC or Rancho Colina. It hasn't made it to that to their desk and hasn't gotten that far. So all that to say, those are real logistical issues. We also know other ones. The state, let's say the county wasn't involved, and it was the state who was able to operate this with just Morro Bay and Cayucas. As the regulations are right now, the state can't provide municipal services. That was one reason why the county needed to be involved. So there would have to be a change in the regulations to allow that to occur. And then if all that could be worked through, then there's the basics of the multi-agency framework between the state, the county, city, and CSD about who would operate, how it would be maintained, and so forth. One of the things we did learn at the state level, they would be looking at, and they were clear about this, they would operate the facility itself but have no desire to operate anything that connects to the facility from the city or CSD, meaning the pipelines. So all that would be on the backs of the city and CSD to put together. So there'd have to be a framework and a structure that would allow that to occur, and you could expect that the state won't CDCR won't necessarily be contributing to the pipeline infrastructure for it to go out at CMC. So all these coordination issues are big nuts to crack, and we expect that would take some time just to get to a point to be able to do that, not to mention the state's basic decision point, which might be a year or two out. And if they say no, then we're back to the drawing board again, where we are today. Rancho Colina is a lot more straightforward. We're talking about a private property owner right now that the city's already developed a relationship with. There would be no need to involve the state at all. The county, perhaps, if the site is not annexed. I actually did talk with David Church at LAFCO about annexation issues at Rancho Colina, even as late as today. And what I found from LAFCO is, A, it is possible to annex the Rancho Colina site, even though it's not contiguous, because it's a wastewater treatment plant. The site would have to be owned by the city ultimately under the current regulations, and it would have to already be committed to municipal use, which we're not sure what that means. We talked that through a little bit internally with LAFCO staff. But I think what that means is if the city has committed it to public facilities or some clear indication it's going to be for municipal use, that can initiate an annexation proceeding fairly straightforwardly. The basic read I got from LAFCO staff is they saw this as a potential opportunity to, from their perspective, provide services and additional water supplies that would be potentially beneficial from their perspective. And I don't see that as a major constraint at the staff level. Again, we don't know until we get into a little bit deeper into that. We also know that we're not sure what CSD will do in this. We do know that if the city were to go it alone, well, they'd go it alone. But if CSD were to be involved, a framework would have to be worked out with them, much as it is right now at the current plant. But it would involve those two agencies and not the county and the state. So it's a little more straightforward there. The five-year goal that the city council had set, is obviously much more realistically achieved at Rancho Colina than at CMC. So logistics are a real constraint at CMC. There's no doubt about that. And the next question has to do with physical site constraints that might affect design at either of the two sites. Again, this relates to a lot of the work Carollo is doing right now. So we're not reporting on this one either yet, too. But we do know that concerns. There is environmentally sensitive habitat near both sites, both associated with either Morro or Choro Creek, but we're not talking about on the meat of either site. So really, those are probably issues that can be worked around. In terms of the CMC site, well, the entire site is prime agricultural soil, both there and across the creek to the north, which is the other site that the state owns, and that is a Coastal Commission issue that would need to be worked through. Probably not a make or break issue, but it certainly is a CCC issue. On the Rancho Colina side, a lot of the same issues come into play. There is one very unique and important issue for the Rancho Colina site. Although with cultural resources, neither site have any known resources that have been uncovered on the sites. At Rancho Colina, the pipeline network going from there to the existing plant, which would have to be part of it, runs right down Highway 41. And when you run right down Highway 41 near Highway 1, you come into a fairly large known cultural resource site that's actually been studied quite a bit as part of a lot of projects that have come forward over the years, since the early 80s, actually, which this project would have to address as well. And that site is, it's a variety of resources there over a scattered area. So pipelines going through there, when trenching occurs, would have to be mindful of that. And, of course, there'd be a lot of monitoring issues and potentially mitigation issues to work that through. But obviously, there have been projects put in that area before, but it is a sensitive issue that is unique to the Rancho Colina site. And I thank Valerie for giving me a lot of information that was helpful in our report there. There's also other issues in terms of greenhouse gases. At the two sites, if you want to look at greenhouse gases as a function of energy use and energy use as a function of distance related to moving water or wastewater, there's no doubt about it that the CMC site involves the movement of water and wastewater much farther, probably will relate to higher energy, which will relate to greenhouse gas emissions probably being higher at the CMC site. But apart from those unique issues, the overall big picture issues for the Coastal Commission are fairly similar at both sites. Now we get to sort of the brass tacks from the City Council's perspective on timing. Is the city's five-year time frame realistically achievable at both sites? Well, we kind of got to that issue on logistics. And then the short answer is CMC, we just don't see that as being realistically possible. At Rancho Colina, it certainly will be challenging, but there is a path to getting there in that time frame. Now, the City Council may want to change their goal relative to the 5 years, but as pointed out in the report, there were good reasons behind the 5-year goal having to do with a variety of issues from water quality to getting a better plant that's got modern amenities, that has reclamation potential, which is consistent with the city's general plan, and so forth. And of course, there's also the cost of money down the line, and things cost more as things go out into the future. So all those relate together on this a little bit. Very important consideration here, obviously. There's a question here. What would the city's role be in a facility at either site? I think it's a fairly straightforward answer here. At the CMC site, it would be the state's ownership, potentially the county running it in the long term. It's what they'd been talking about, although obviously in the short term doesn't seem like either player is interested in the very short term. But if it does go forward, think of the city as likely a customer out at that site, not an operator. And though with the caveat that the city will have to somehow put the pipeline infrastructure in to get from here to there. And the operation and maintenance of the pipeline infrastructure is a question. There may be some sort of dual partnership or arrangement that will make it all work. But the site itself, I doubt, it's really not going to be in the city's hands. The Rancho Colina site, we're really talking about consolidating everything under one roof with the city. The city would own and operate and maintain it all. And if the CSD is involved, obviously some sort of framework can be worked out with them, or potentially they'd be a customer of the city. That's yet to be determined. But obviously it's a more straightforward situation at Rancho Colina. And then the final question in our report, are there relative funding advantages to either site? Are there things available at one site or another? And, of course, we went through that a little bit in Kestrel's report that you had heard. And the short answer is it's not a lot of difference. We did hear there are some issues that are very important. For example, if drinking water is at the top of the list and you have water quality problems to solve, such as nitrates, that obviously would really help out funding, if it were true at either site. But generally speaking, the water supply benefits are an important thing that are going to help on the funding. We're looking at cost issues. Rancho Colina appears to have relatively many more advantages, the logistics being a very big one. The 5-year goal is potentially achievable at Rancho Colina and really not at CMC. I think the completion of the Corolla report will really shed a lot of light on cost and design issues. And, if the cost is much, much less at CMC, I think that flips the equation. We're not sure where that's going to fall, but we do know a lot of factors that go into cost. We're talking about them today, and I don't really want to go beyond that at this point. But the final recommendation would really benefit from that cost information, because it's going to also relate to things such as the cost of the water, the reclaimed water itself, and the differences between what it might cost in the Chorro Valley versus Moro Valley, which relates to the growers and relates to ratepayers and so forth. That will be part of our ultimate report as well, and that's one thing Mike Nunley is working on in some detail right now and working closely with Carollo to that end. And at this point, that's my report. We're going to be reporting almost the same kind of report to the City Council and having a staff recommendation that goes along with that at that time. But I think you get a good feel for where we're at this point. And I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that report. It's a lot of information. And you can see where those background studies came into some of these decisions here. So thank you. So I guess we're looking for two things here right now. First is feedback on this report, because I don't want to lose sight on that. I think we have an opportunity right now to provide feedback on this report. And then the other item would be next steps and where do we go from here and what sort of recommendation are we going to make? Because, again, as we discussed earlier, this is our final meeting before the City Council is still at this point anticipated to make some sort of determination. So I'll bring us back to that. Where do we go from here? But I want to first open it up to comments on the report. Barbara?
I just want to make a general comment. Thank you for that report. I think it was very thorough and detailed. I especially like the format and the history, the background. I would recommend similar format for the City Council. The only thing I didn't like is the small font on some of the charts, but even the charts were good at that. So it really helped tie a lot of this information together.
Thank you. Anyone else? Jenny?
Okay. I'd echo Barbara's comment. I really thought this report was very readable. I actually sat down and read it in one sitting. And I recommend to the community that everybody take a look at this report, because there is a lot of meat in it. I think the biggest surprise for me was I really didn't realize until reading the report to what extent the potential partners at CMC were so reluctant to go forward with this. I honestly thought, I guess based on 6 months ago, that the regional board, the prison, that basically there was a lot more enthusiasm for this project. So although I think that, it's a very attractive site because there are lots of potential opportunities for reclamation there, I think it's going to be very difficult, much more difficult than I anticipated, getting everybody together, and I have no idea how long that would take. So with that said, I just had one quick question, and this relates to the CMC plant. It's just a nit, but I'm interested. It says on page 2, the CMC site is currently encumbered by an existing state bond, which could significantly complicate property transfer and acquisition. And if you could just talk a little bit about that.
Sure. And actually, I might refer to Rick to help me out a little bit here. Okay. But I think the short issue is there are restrictions with what can be done on that site that are tied to the use of the bonds that are actually connected to that. It is also true that if the state does not transfer ownership of that site and retains it, that may make a difference. But I'm really going to defer to Rick a little bit, who helped me out a little bit here.
Sure. Whenever you build a public project using state bond funds, one of the initial steps is to acquire ownership of the property, because that ownership of the property is collateral that's used in the financing of those bonds. And so once the state and CDCR have gone through that financing process, then that particular amount of land is already encumbered. So to break off a portion of that land for another use, the state would have to come up with alternative collateral.
just a quickie. On all the review that you've had on CMC, since we're getting more information on the CMC site all the time, has this changed the evaluation by those that do it on the Tri-W site? Because now we know a lot more about the Chorro Valley. We know more about the wells. We know about the percolation. We know about the ag opportunities. I don't know how far back you have to put reclaimed water to be able to make it potable at our wells, and I assume that that's an issue too. But my basic question is has, I know the city council has made a decision on Rancho Colina, but Tri-W looks pretty good to me, but I was wondering whether it's changed its complexion in any way since you've had more opportunity to develop and more information on the Chorro Valley.
That's a fair question. We didn't specifically look at that, but I thought about that a lot while we're putting this together. If you recall, you know, when the Tri-W site was being considered, and I think at that time it was relative to a couple other sites, including the Giannini site and Rigetti sites, it looked fairly good, but it had certain downsides that are still downsides. And less downsides than relative upsides in the Moro Valley, I guess, relative to reclamation. The water supply issue, if it looked radically much better in Chorro Valley, that might change the equation a little bit here. But we're looking at something that's a little bit like two different varieties of apples in Moro and Chorro Valley rather than apples and oranges. So I don't think it really changed the equation there. We also know that Tri-W site is also at relatively higher elevation. But, it, you know, I rather than going too much farther than that, nothing really radically changes our look at issues in the Chorro Valley versus the Moro Valley, and that would certainly be the case with Tri-W site. If you recall, the recommendation about Rancho Colina versus Rigetti versus Giannini versus Tri-W, they're all considered fairly good sites, and the council picked one that they felt was best. Our report reported as best. I would imagine it still would.
Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I have kind of a hypothetical question, and it's probably because more than likely we won't get the state's cooperation, and it's probably a question more from Mike Nunley. But what would it take to upgrade the existing CMC plants that can handle the, 2.8 million gallons a day of everybody?
I'll answer what I can. And part of Carollo's scope of work is to really develop a process model. And what they're doing is taking the existing facilities at CMC, they're plugging it into a computer model, taking the real data from CMC, which it took a few weeks for them to get it. That's really the holdup right now. And actually trying to see what capacity is left in that existing plant, how much can they squeeze out, how conservative should the assumptions be, and then what additional facilities are required. So that's their first step. And now that they've got the data, they can really crunch through that. So we hope we'll be able to provide updates as we get them.
Compared to building a whole new plant, the upgrade in comparison of cost, what would be a magnitude of the difference?
It just depends on how much capacity the existing facility can handle. You know, if it's really designed to handle its current contracted capacity, then you could speculate that the expansion might look closer to, just because if you look at flows, it's number based. Your basins are going to be sized based on flows and loads, and so you could say if that really is close to its current capacity of 1.2 MGD, and we need to get to an additional 1.5 MGD. Then you would lean towards it looking more like a second facility by the time you got all the basins in. But I can't say where Carollo is going to land with it. I can just say if that is the case, that's where we would expect it to be. But we don't know yet.
kind of following up on that, isn't it true that CMC is like currently or recently been getting fined quite heavily because of their discharge?
And what I can speak to is their recent project to switch over to ultraviolet disinfection. That was one of the objectives of that project, was to deal with a lot of those effluent issues.
Go ahead.
Just one on page 37, table 5, figure 1. Mm-hmm. Missing me. I don't know if it mattered or not.
Okay.
Thank you. What I'll say is there, you have a number of different state agencies regulating that. And just like at CMC, to give you a parallel, is you've had a discharge from CMC's wastewater facility upstream of the city wells for quite a long time. And they're effectively recharging your groundwater. And the regulations for that discharge are all based on the receiving water being Choro Creek. And one of the beneficial uses of Choro Creek is that it recharges municipal groundwater. So it's regulated. You got discharge regulations as opposed to potable water regulations. And I would anticipate you'll see the same thing at Moro Valley. And that's one of the things that we had Larry Walker and Associates look at, is considering the beneficial uses, which is a big which is a regulatory term for those two bodies. What would the discharge look like? And what they had concluded was a Moro Valley discharge, so if we discharged straight into the creek, that the discharge requirements would be a little less stringent than Choro Creek, because you don't have Choro Creek's considered an impaired water body under the Clean Water Act. And that means the state has to develop action plans for cleaning it up. And those action plans are called total maximum daily loads. So that TMDL acronym has with it a bunch of regulatory requirements related to nutrient removal, related to pathogens, and those get assigned to everybody that discharges to Choro Creek. You don't have that on Moro Valley. Or Moro Creek, if you had a direct discharge, so that's how it would be analyzed by the state. And I'd suggest you take a look at the Moro Valley, or take a look at that Larry Walker Associates analysis, because what they tried to do was lay out side by side what the discharge limitations might be at those locations, and so it wasn't based on distance upstream, or it wasn't based on how many strata there were between the discharge point and the groundwater.
Mr. Woodson, are you asking, let's say we wanted to put it into a percolation basin, how far would that have to be away from a well? How much travel time would that take to withdraw that water out?
Okay.
That's where I'm going.
Just to be real brief, I didn't know Choro Valley was considered contaminated by the state. I didn't know that. But I knew that there was a lot of problems in the estuary because of the CMC plant. So I figured the 6 miles linear from the CMC site to our Choro wells should be adequate to clean up that water to make it potable. But I didn't know whether our site at La Colina, Rancho Colina, was upstream far enough to where you could discharge surface output and get the Moro wells recharged with potable water.
I think in the Moro Valley, what we'd be looking towards, Spencer Harris tried to explain this to City Council to some success, and it is in-lieu recharge. So we would distribute reclaimed water to agricultural operations in lieu of them pumping their groundwater. So in effect, them not pumping groundwater would be recharging the aquifer. We would give them an alternative to using their groundwater wells so that we could benefit from it downstream. Now that involves, it's easier said than done. There's a lot of contract issues that would have to be resolved. During drought years, it might be easier to negotiate. During non-drought years, If you have a dry hole in the ground, you're probably it might be easier to negotiate than if you don't have a dry hole in the ground.
Okay. Just one more, and so have any of these potential ag users in the Moro Valley been amenable or contacted or discussed with on these contract terms that would be required of them?
In generalities, we've not gotten down to specifics of, you know, what the water would cost. I think in general terms, I think if we could provide water at what it costs them or less to deliver their groundwater, it would be much more beneficial to them to use than it would be if we charged them some higher fee. I'll let Dale answer.
I have contacted all of my neighbors. They are not willing to give up their wells or their water rights in lieu of recycled water. Every one of them I've answered is the same thing. No.
Dale, can I ask you one more question?
Yeah.
Your poll of your fellow neighbors up Moro Valley, are they willing to allow their wells to be metered?
We are already on meters.
Oh, you are?
Oh, yeah. Meters. We have to report to the state what we use.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, as of January 1st, 2012, we were required. And we've been reporting, at least I have, since 1977 to the State Water Regional Quality Control Board. We have to report. Every 3 years, we report what we use.
And I'm glad we had that clarification, because it's not typically a contract provision to give up your water rights when there's an in-lieu exchange. I'm intimately familiar with the Los Osos contracts, and they still have the right to their wells, to even develop new wells if they want to on their property. There's no infringement on water rights or property rights for an in-lieu exchange. It's just you've historically been pumping 50 acre feet of water for irrigation. Here's 50 acre feet of water, of recycled water, so you don't need that pumping anymore, which will then benefit the city's well fields downstream. Yes.
Hey, John, can I ask a question on cost to the farmers and the and the Los Osos project, since we're talking about?
Yeah, no problem. So we had a workshop with Monterey Valley farmers, and because they've been using recycled water down there for decades, and the cost per acre foot there is about $270 an acre foot for recycled water, and it's been a couple of years since I've looked at that, but I'm pretty certain that that's the amount of recycled water, but don't quote me, but it's right around there. Well, in Los Osos, there's two different types of contracts. There's one to irrigators such as the school district and the golf course, and the school district in particular, theirs is a 10% reduction in rates from their municipal rates, which is, it's actually a substantial amount of money, but they're paying it now anyway, and they're getting a reduction of what they would be paying to use potable water, drinking water. The incentive is you pay 10% less to irrigate with recycled water, and that was a contract that was entered into with the school district. Exactly, I believe, what they have with the city of San Luis Obispo and their irrigation at the school sites in San Luis Obispo. Moro Bay, Los Osos, and San Luis Obispo are all part of San Luis Coastal Unified, one school district. Our ag contracts for the farmers in and around the cemetery area, Clark Valley Road, those contracts are 10-year terms, and it's $100 per acre foot. There was a baseline established, and then an incentive for them to, if they use more water, of $75 an acre foot above the established threshold. They're subject to renegotiation in 10 years when they expire. And folks who signed up to a preliminary program participation agreement had infrastructure paid for by the project to get the water delivered to them, to their property line. Those that did not, and this is the model that was used in Monterey, those that did not will have to bear the cost now if they want to have recycled water. And because of the drought, we're already getting requests for people to tap into the facility and start using the water. They're going to have to pay and finance the construction costs from the facility to their property line.
Just want to add something to that. In my experience looking at a variety of reclaimed water projects in my various roles in different states, reclaimed water is very rarely based upon the cost that it costs to produce that water. It's more a market rate driven rather than what it costs to deliver the water. And there's in some agencies that is your only option for wastewater disposal is reclaimed water. That's partially true in Morro Bay because we're going to be expected to provide reclaimed water. So that may be a sunk cost in the assumptions in the treatment plant is that we'll be providing reclaimed water to those ag users. So just want to add that it's really not a cost of production. It's based on market rate.
Yeah, I think the $100 an acre foot matches fairly closely with existing energy costs for pumping. It depends on, you know, everyone's well is a little bit different, but it was pretty close. You're also buying an assurance of what, you know, people like to say a drought-proof source, and if you're locked into a long-term commitment, that's very beneficial. In a Monterey County, they found they started out with a lower rate than 270, and those as demand has exponentially increased for that recycling.
I guess this is to Rob. What is the quality of water in our Morro wells now, and do you have any expectations that the quality of the water will change if we put the treatment plant up there and we install ag water releases?
Currently, the water that is supplied to our Morro Valley wells is high in nitrates. We have to run that water through desal plant prior to it being used for nitrate removal. And the city's analysis showed that's due to some agricultural operations. We're going to be doing some confirming tests to make sure that's exactly where it's coming from, but prior reports show that it's due to ag operations up there. That was one of the reasons we got a health department grant to upgrade our desal plant, was the idea that we're going to be drawing water through the aquifer, and it'll, as we have worked with some of the agriculture operators to put less fertilizer on their fields, it should be flushing that water through. I would guess that if we have a permit to discharge, whether it be reclaimed water or to Morro Creek, we're going to have some nutrient limit in our discharge permit. So we're not going to be able to put high nitrate water or high salt water into the groundwater aquifer up there because we cannot degradate that groundwater or that surface water body. So in the long term, it should improve the Morro Valley wells.
Would you anticipate Morro Bay using Morro wells as a regular use of water supply in conjunction with the state? In other words, it looks like the Morro wells can go up to, say, 500 acre feet a year, and we use 1,100. That's almost half. Would Morro Bay Water anticipate using Morro Creek wells as a regular source of water in complementing state water and reducing state water use?
That'll become more important in the future when it's time to renegotiate those state water contracts. Right now we're kind of locked into how much state water we get. So it's most cost effective to use state water first because we're paying the high debt service costs on state water, whether we're taking a drop of it or not. So at some point in time, those bonds will be retired. Now, if we want to stay on state water, my belief is the bonds will never retire because there will be another state water project that the users will have to buy into at some point in time. Given that, I think Morro Bay went from having a sole source water supply in its wells to having a sole source water supply in its state water. I think the community would benefit from having a diversified water supply so that in state water outages, we can supply without problem the community water and not have to rely on that pipeline coming across the from Devil's Den to supply us with water. So I think in the long term we would benefit from diversifying our water supply to not just using the Morro Valley wells more, but when the creek flow allows it, to be using our Chorro Valley wells also.
I'd like to little follow up on your comment there. I'm of the opinion that most of our nitrates that are in our Morro Basin aquifer are coming from the collection system and the sewage that's coming from North Morro Bay and Cayucas. And then it's getting treated through the plant. A couple of things that I believe that would be of benefit with this site is that by treating by going to the Rancho Colina and recharging our Morro Basin aquifers and using that creek, I think that if memory serves, there was a study done by Cleet in 2007, I think, that stated that shows that the movement of the aquifer is such that we have a possibility of injecting. I think you did a nice job, John. That was good. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else have any comments on the report before we move on to part two? So part two, I guess, is we're going to talk about where we go from here. And one thing I want to mention is that back when I guess when the last project went for a permit, the part of the denial message was a robust alternatives analysis, and clearly that's necessary in order to get a permit this go around. And I think the deliberation has been great, and there was a robust alternatives analysis, and now it's narrowed down to really two valleys and two sites, and we're continuing to have the dialogue between these two locations. And but we're not there. In my opinion, I don't think we're there. We can't make a determination tonight. I don't think we're able to give an opinion to City Council and feel comfortable that when we go forward for a permit and the permit agency, specifically the Coastal Commission, look at the process and see that the advisory committee opined on a document that wasn't quite complete, that's a flaw that I think needs to be resolved. So I would like to talk about us not making a decision tonight and also encouraging the City Council not to make a decision until we've had the opportunity for these reports to be finalized and for us to make one final recommendation to them when we have all of the highlighted areas and the blanks filled in. I think it's beneficial for the process. And I also think it's beneficial that we let the City Council know that timing-wise, it was great for them to attain to a November deadline and work in an expeditious fashion. But there's also two new City Council members coming on board middle of December. And they were elected for 4 years, and this is going to be the major issue for them over the next 4 years. And we'd be doing the community a disservice if we were recommending to the City Council that a decision be made before they were on board. I think the siting should be their decision and their ownership, and that they participate in it from the very beginning, and that is going to be beneficial to all of us as they work through this process, having been there from the very beginning instead of coming on board when the site was already selected. And then they can always say, hey, I wasn't part of that. But they'll have skin in the game if they start on it from day one. So what I'd be happy to make a motion. I obviously want to talk this through with everyone, but I envision a motion where we our recommendation to the city council is that they do not take action in November. They direct staff to come back to our advisory board when all the documents are final and the report is final, and then wait until probably after the new year to make their final determination. And I'd open that up for discussion. And it's not a motion yet.
Thank you, John. As you know, our finance subcommittee did meet, and we didn't have an opportunity to finalize, but we have a draft document of some recommendations, and three summary recommendations, the last of which is postpone the decision 4 to 6 weeks because the reports have all been furnished in the last 30 days, with the exception of this final one that wasn't even available when we had our meeting. And our concerns were exactly the same. We don't want to accelerate a decision when we have 90% or 70% of the information. And we also think it's important, or at least I do, for the public and the perception that we are giving, you know, both options serious consideration and full consideration to the extent we can. So while we recognize there's still a lot of outstanding questions and they may not be resolved in the 4 to 6 weeks we originally recommended, maybe that should be 90 days or 60 to 90 days. We still think there's some merit in, you know, getting all of the information and maybe even a last opportunity for some public input, or now that this information will become or is public very soon, as well as the perception that we've just made some rush decision, like you said before, the eventual city council is seated, as well as them, all five members, taking ownership to the extent possible. So,
yeah, John, I agree with you. I'd like to see the numbers coming out of the Crowell report. I'd like to see some dollars too. But one of the things I'm looking at, the schedule that we just got, which has already been revised, they were supposed to make a decision on the 12th, and that was slipped already from, I believe it was August before. I guess my question is,
meet on that first Wednesday in December instead of the second, so that if that would work for everybody, it may work into a council schedule also.
Are you confident that the reports would be finalized by that date? I would hate to set a time and not have the reports finalized.
Well, maybe what we can do is hold that date, and if it doesn't work, we can cancel that meeting and still meet the 10th if that works. But I would like to leave the option open if there is that report availability, and maybe that would give an opportunity for the other subcommittees to meet and talk about their specific concerns and formulate some sort of recommendations. Given that we don't have all the answers yet, it's going to be difficult to do, but come back with several recommendations for City Council.
And just to add to that, I would say we'll know pretty well in about a week and a half whether that schedule is doable, because that's when it will all tie into getting everything pretty much buttoned up by then from Carollo. And that'll give us enough time internally to kind of turn this into the report and get the rough edges filed off. But if we don't have things by then, we'll know pretty much and be able to tell you that that schedule won't work. But we're confident we'll be able to do that.
Any other comments on this? Any public comment? No.
I just say yes. I think you're right. I think it's premature to make a hard decision that the city's going to have to live with for 50 years, And we do have a little float, I think, at least from what Rob says. And well, I hate to eat up the float on the front end. That's not prudent project management. But I think we need a little bit more information, especially dollars. Dollars bother me.
Should I, would I also be warrantable, instead of just a motion and a vote and a submittal, that we send a letter to the city council for them at their meeting? Is this a high enough importance
yes.
to do so? Okay. So I'll be in the motion as well.
Hey, Rob, on this NPDS schedule that you're working on, is that tied with this project, with having a site picked, or you know, I'm trying to figure out the horse and the carriage, you know. And
what it is the NPDS permit for to operate the existing plant.
Right.
We anticipate that our permit is going to be a full secondary permit with interim effluent limitations, and that will give us 5 years before that permit expires,
right.
and to have a new plant. Now, regional board says if we're making reasonable progress, like we've moved dirt and we have a plant under construction, they would consider working with us for beyond that five-year period. But if we're still sitting here talking about where we're going to put that plant in 5 years, I don't think anybody is going to protect us from the mandatory fines that we'll be facing.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Should I try to make a motion?
Yes.
I'll do my best then. I move that we direct the chair to write a letter to the city council indicating that the advisory committee has made the following recommendations. One, they do not make a decision at their November 12th meeting regarding site selection. Two, they direct staff to finalize the reports and make a presentation to the advisory committee at a tentatively scheduled meeting the first Wednesday of December. And any such decision by the city council should happen after the new council members have been seated and are in office.
I'll second that.
Did that encompass everything that we were looking for?
And that first Wednesday in December is, in case we're tracking, December 3rd.
Okay.
December 3rd.
And also put in, John, that then we will follow up with a subsequent recommendation after this, prior to that December 12th meeting.
Yeah.
Them into points as to cost considerations in anything finance related. And then we had three recommendations that we're toying with, the one which we've already discussed, postponement of a decision. The other two recommendations were one specifically about the Los Osos and funding, and maybe we, you know, look at some more funding or get an exemption from a congressional exemption to help us, but that's probably more long-term. And then specifically, I had some specific recommendations on contract negotiations, legal terms and conditions, and how I've seen large projects in business, large enterprise projects operate, and particularly some of the problems you see where you have a lot of, whether it's agencies, corporate entities, customer suppliers involved. And the more you have, even though in theory you may have a better approach from a regional standpoint, the more difficult it is to avoid this finger pointing. And I apply those lessons to specifically the CMC site, because you have somebody owning the land, somebody building it, somebody else managing it. And so I tried to summarize that that into something where typically I see a lot of large contracts bid where there's a subset of terms and conditions that suppliers must accept before they are down selected, and as opposed to just choosing a specific site, person, entity, supplier, and then starting the contract negotiation. So I've summarized that, and I think our final report will maybe make that a little more clear. But I'm open to any questions on that.
Sure. You got me to think of a question that's only tangential to it, but helpful. If, as a result of the motion you just passed, the council decides they'll buy more time, I would suggest that this board here, if you'd like, put together, now you'll have a little more time to look at this report and any of the other reports for that matter, put together a memo to staff that suggests anything from errors like omitting the right names to technical issues or things to consider, that since we'll have a little time to finalize the report, we may be able to do that with that benefit, and or a series of questions along the lines you suggest to the council that they can consider outside of the report, just beyond this process right here.
That was my intention. Thank you.
I would suggest that even outside of a memo, if folks have comments or questions, just to report them directly to you instead of the formal process of us developing a memo.
I would agree. I would just want to make sure that sometimes when you do that shotgun style, you get two comments that are in direct contradiction with one another. So we're not sure what to make of those. So to the degree you can consolidate, that'd be helpful too.
Thank you.
Perhaps it would be a good role for each of the committees to, when they meet, to compile their list of questions internal to that committee and then, forward those on. And then that might be a way to avoid the inconsistency.
Do we direct these to John directly or via Rob?
It might be best to direct them to me, and I can forward them on to John so that you're all sending them to me. And I think everybody has my email address, and so send them to either individually or from the subcommittees, and I'll compile them and get them to John or whoever is best answering those. It might be our consultant, Carollo, or somebody else.
Okay. Any other reports from the subcommittees?
No, but I was wondering whether you, Mr. Chair, would consider maybe we meet 2 weeks from now to discuss questions that we want to be specifically addressed in the December 3rd meeting. Do you want to get together as a group, or do you want us to do it individually?
I think we should probably try to get together in our subcommittees instead of having staff. We're holding staff up from working on those reports by holding a meeting, so I'd feel better if we worked in our subcommittees and provided those comments. Would you agree that be a little more?
I think that might be a little bit more efficient, yeah, if you could work in the subcommittees. And if you need office space, meeting room space, let me know, and we can get meeting room availability to meet either at our public services office or at one of the city facilities.
Okay. Who is going to coordinate the subcommittee meetings as far as?
So finance has, they're pretty proactive, and they've gone on and had quite a few meetings, and I thank you for that. The other ones we haven't met formally, so let's discuss after this meeting.
Would change in light of $750 billion,
and I can comment help staff out there. Two things: one, Finance Committee definitely can take a look at it. I've given some presentations on the water bond myself in my role with my day job, so I have some resources I can share. And then also on October 14th, when the County Board of Supervisors had a water summit, their state lobbyist gave a presentation, part of which was the water bond information. So there's already some existing resources. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I'm glad you brought it up because I spoke about it last meeting and was hoping it would pass. And this could provide a good opportunity for Morro Bay and Cayucas to be a beneficiary of billions of dollars, literally. Some that is earmarked for the Central Coast, others that will be competitive. But water recycling is a high priority. Nitrate and contaminated drinking water is a high priority. So, we've been talking about both of those issues. So this could be a very good opportunity for Morro Bay because they're not going to release the money tomorrow. It's going to be years before some of these programs get funded, and the timing with this project implementation could be perfect.
I also think we need, as Monica Reed mentioned, we need to stay engaged with the rural development process and how those monies are going to be distributed, and make sure that we comment as appropriate on as the guidelines, the grant guidelines, the loan guidelines are coming out, to make sure that the state knows that we're here. And we have specific concerns about, guidelines. Whether they listen to us or not, that's another story. But we need to stay engaged. Also, it keeps our name kind of near the top of the list if we're always at those meetings.
Excellent. Okay. Well, then we will adjourn this meeting and hopefully reconvene at our new tentatively scheduled meeting, which is December 3rd of 2014.
And to a late date, or to a location to be determined. Probably not at the fire station.
Okay, thank you.